I think I've been gone forever. We're just every other week for the past while. But it's good to see everybody. And we will be gone again next weekend. So we're continuing our every other week. But it is good to see our visitors today from Saginaw and from other places. Good to see you, Elise. If you would you turn with me to Mark chapter 4? Mark chapter 4. I want to introduce a topic I want to talk about today, found in Mark chapter 4. Now, any of you boaters out there? No. Have any of you been out in a boat in a storm? How bad was it, Tom? Fishing through a storm. We have an 18.5-foot boat. And around the Great Lakes, they have what are called small craft advisories. Because when the waves get to a certain point, they say little boats shouldn't be out there. Well, we go up to Drummond Island, which is in the Upper Peninsula, and we call it the Big Water because it's Lake Huron, and it's, you know, 200 miles across to the other side. And if you get out too far out on the lake and a storm comes up in a little boat like an 18.5-footer, you start to get scared. Now, I'm not a full-time fisherman, because if you ever watch The Deadliest Catch, I think it is, and they're out fishing for salmon, or no, they're fishing for lobster and all that stuff, and you see some of the waves that they're in and the waves crashing over, and they do that for a living, but I can't imagine being out there like that. But what we're going to do is jump into a story about some fishermen on a boat out on a sea. And I have seen the fishing boats on the Sea of Galilee. They raised one up that was about 18, 20 feet long. And I said, there is no way I would want to be in that boat for a long time in a stormy. It was just a much smaller boat than I envisioned, okay? And it was dated back to the time of Christ. And we're going to break into a thought here in Mark chapter 4, verse 36, Christ said, let's go to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And it says, and leaving the crowd behind, they took him, speaking of the Messiah, with them in the boat just as he was. And other boats were with him. And it says in verse 37, a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that the boat was already being swamped. Now, there's a difference between being in a boat that's going up and down, bobbing like a cork, versus a boat that's being swamped. And when the wind is blowing and the boat's taking on water and you're going to sink. Now, remember, these were fishermen. This was their livelihood. They had certainly been in storms before. He had called them as fishermen, and they were like, this is not good. And we have the Messiah with us, and the boat is sinking. It's being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. Now, I've been in some rough water in our boat with power, not wind, or with oars, and saying, ooh, man, this is sort of dicey. I want to get to shore. There is no way in the world I would say, I think I'll take a nap on the back of the boat. And yet it says he was asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, teacher, do you not care that we're going to die? This wasn't landlubbers. These were fishermen. They said, we're going to die, and you're sleeping on the back of the boat. So he woke up, and he rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace, be still. Then the wind ceased, and there was a dead calm. And he said to them, why are you afraid? Have you still no faith? Now, I can't imagine that they were afraid over a little minor thing. They were thinking they were going to die, and yet his question to them was, why are you afraid? Don't you have any faith? And I don't know any one of us right now that has gone through that experience, because I didn't see many boaters where you thought you were going to die right then and there because you were going to drown because of a storm. And he said, why are you afraid? Don't you have any faith? And why do you think he could say that? Because he was what? With them, right? Do you think I'm going to let the boat go down when I'm with you? Do you think I'm just going to let you drown while I'm sleeping on the back? I mean, there's all sorts of things. And he said, why are you so afraid? Don't you have faith? But you know, as we look at what's going on in the world around us, who wants to watch the news anymore? Who wants to listen to the pundits talk about the economy? We're already starting the election cycle and all the stuff that people like to talk about, how bad it is under this person's tenure, and this person can't provide the answers I can. We look at what's going on in the Middle East. We look at what's going on in Asia. We look into our own homes, our families, just the prayer requests, some of the suffering and the pain. And it's very easy for people to get uptight and to get anxious, to get fearful, to be deeply concerned with what's going on. You know, in Philippians chapter 4, if you'll turn there, Philippians chapter 4, because it's understandable when we are physically in danger of dying in a storm. I mean, last Sunday night, we'd been gone all weekend, and we got home Sunday night, and I think because we had already gone to bed, I was exhausted. It was just before 10 o'clock that a storm hit. And the lightning and the thunder and the rain. And then I stood there for over 35 minutes. There was not a break in the thunder. It started in the lightning and it did not stop thundering for 35 minutes. That's how much lightning there was. I have never seen that much lightning in my life or heard that much thunder. And a lot of it was a long way off, but it was just steady rumble. And every now and then we had one strike closer to home, and it's the crack and the boom and the rolling thing across the fields. And it was unbelievable, the power, the wind, the rain. But I didn't think I was going to die. I thought, wow. And people can say there's no God. I mean, look what is out there. There have been so few times in my life that I was really worried for my true life safety. Part of it was stupidity and mountain climbing, other things, but you get through it. But it was self-inflicted. But we don't go through that very often. But we go through as every day, every week, every month, every year, we have to live life. And so as we read in Philippians chapter 4, verse 6, we are told, do not worry about anything. What do some of the other versions say? Somebody want to read a version, Philippians 4, verse 6? Tom, what do you have there? ESV. Now off.
Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God.
Anybody else have a different? Eileen, what do you have? And what does it say?
Okay. Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank Him for all He has done.
So here it says, don't worry, don't be anxious, don't have the sleepless nights. Anybody ever have sleepless nights where you just lay there and your brain won't shut off because you're worried? You're trying to, what's going to happen tomorrow? How am I going to deal with this? How am I going to deal with that? I don't have the answers, and you just can't go to sleep because your brain won't shut off. And a lot of it is because we are worrying. We are anxious. We are uptight. But you know, so much of what is in Scripture, it says, here's the problem, don't do this, but it gives us an answer, right? What does it say? Do not worry about anything. So what doesn't that cover, I guess? Anything means don't worry about anything. There's not something it's okay to worry about. There's not something that it's okay to be anxious about. There's not something that should keep you up all night stewing and fretting. It says, do not worry about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. We're being given, this is the method. If you're uptight, if you're anxious, if you're concerned, if you're worried, you shouldn't be, but it says you should by prayer. And supplication is a very intense, focused, directed request to God. It says, with thanksgiving, let your request be made known to God. Now, if you are like me, a lot of times I'm very good about the fervent prayer and supplication, but I leave out the thanksgiving. Remember the Psalms that it says that we are to enter His gates with praise and into His courts with thanksgiving? We want access to the Most High. It says, let your request be known, pray about it, be fervent about it, be focused about it, but it says, do it with thanksgiving. Let your request be made known to God. And guess what happens? Verse 7, and here's the result when you do that. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. You know, if you turn to 1 Peter chapter 5, because this topic is not a little one in Scripture. 1 Peter chapter 5, in verse 7, it says, cast all your anxiety on Him, speaking of the Messiah, because He cares for you. Cast all your anxiety on Him because He cares for you. But you know what it starts off with? And a lot of times we forget about that. We have to read a verse or two before, because there is a condition for how God intervenes a lot of times. In verse 5, this is speaking about shepherding God's people. You who are younger must accept the authority of the elders. And all of you, speaking of the elders and the younger, must clothe yourselves with humility in your dealings with one another. For God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And He says in verse 6, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that He may exalt you in due time. Then it says you can cast your anxiety upon Him because He cares for you. God resists the proud. God looks to the humble. And I would propose that if you are proud and you have anxiety, He's not going to be as intimately involved in your life as He would be if you were humble and you cast your anxiety upon Him. That's what it says. Cast your anxiety upon Him. Let's turn to Psalm chapter 37. Psalm 37. In Psalm 37. In verse 8 and 9, I'm reading from the New Revised Standard Version. It says, refrain from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. What happens when you fret? What an interesting word, right? Fret. F-R-E-T. Do not fret, my version says. Tom, what's your version say?
Forsake wrath and fret not yourself.
It says, fret not yourself. Okay, fret anybody? Not yourself. Have a version that doesn't use fret, Bill?
Don't get upset.
Don't get upset. Don't fret. You ever fretted, stewed about something? You know, the Hebrew word here for anger is when your face gets all contorted? You ever see anybody who's just angry? And the word fret, when you look it up, means to burn, to be consumed with being upset. It says don't do that. Because when you do that, it only leads to evil, to wrongdoing, to the wrong approach. And it says, for the wicked shall be cut off, but those who wait for the eternal shall inherit the land. Anybody wanted action right now? Right now, my suffering has gone on 1 second longer than I can talk. Right now, God, I want answers. Right now, I want it over. Right now, I want a solution. Right now, I've been angry with God before. I have. Because He wasn't on my timetable. He wasn't doing things according to my limitations. He wasn't doing things according to my expectations. And I have been mad at God before. I've been angry with Him because you promised, and look at my life. You promised you would take care of me, and look at my trials. You promised, and look at my finances. You promised, and look at my real. You promised, and look at my health. You promised, and looked at whatever it is that we get upset. We fret. We burn. We stew. We complain. And we blame it on God for not responding. And how could you be God? Where's the loving God, right? You ever heard somebody say, where's this loving God that we're supposed to know? If you go to Proverbs, just over, Book of Proverbs, chapter 20. Verse 24 of Proverbs 20, it says, all of our steps are ordered by the Eternal. How then can we understand our ways? We don't believe that, I think, a lot of times, because we get confused when what's going on in our lives. We're saying, how can this be? What's going on? Why is this happening? Do you believe that all of our steps are ordered by the Eternal? Then it says, how then can we understand our own ways? I love the footnote here. It says, we are often confused by the events around us. Many things we will never understand. Do we accept that? Many things we will never understand? Others will fall into a place years to come as we look back and see how God was working. Have you ever done that? Look back, said, God was there. At the time, I didn't believe Him. At the time, I didn't see it. At the time, I couldn't understand it. But now looking back, God was there. Says others will fall into place in years to come as we look back and see how God was working. This proverb counsels us not to worry if we don't understand everything as it happens. Instead, we should trust that God knows what He is doing, even if His timing or design is not clear to us. Because you see, God doesn't owe us an explanation. God doesn't have to justify Himself to us. He is God Most High. He is the Eternal Omnipotent who knows what's going on, and we are just to trust Him. We are to be humble before Him, and we are to thank Him at all times and in all circumstances. Because if we go back to Psalm 37, you know, that proverb is saying we don't understand always what's going on, and sometimes we might never. And other times we only understand when we can look back over the history of time and say, yes, God was working in my life. But in Psalm 23, it says, Our steps are made firm by the Eternal when He delights in our way. Though we stumble, we shall not fall headlong, for the Eternal holds us by the hand. 37:23. What did I say? All right. 37:23. Thank you. Our steps are made firm by the Eternal when He delights in our way. Though we stumble, we shall not fall headlong, for the Eternal holds us by the hand. Why is that important to remember and to understand? Because so much of our life we have no control over. You know, I think that's one of the challenges that our young people have, is understanding fully that there are a lot of things we have no control over in our life. At work, I have a bunch of young engineers that come to me and say, if you would just do this, or if we would just do this, or if we would just do that, and they have what to them is a very clear solution, and I look and I go, if only it were that easy. And then I try and explain to them that there's a lot of dynamics involved that they aren't aware of, and it's not so clear and simple because we also have to rely on other people. Other people have free will and free choice and things, and it's not always that's how easy it is. You know, if you turn to Luke chapter 12, an encouraging set of verses, but it's also telling us the reality of some things. Luke chapter 12. In verse 22, speaking about this very topic of worry and anxiety and concern and fretting, Jesus said to His disciples, therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life. Anybody ever worried about their life, what's going on in their life, the trials in their life, the pain in their life, the suffering in their life, the issues in their life? And it's like, what's going on in my life? With my children, with my spouse, with my job, with my education, with whatever it is, we worry about our life. And the Messiah specifically says, I tell you, do not worry about your life. Do not worry about what you will eat or about your body or what you will wear, for life is more than food and the body is more than clothing. There is a purpose why we are here. There is a plan why we are here, and it is not about what we eat and what we wear and what we live or what we drive or what we do. And He said, those are just things that I will give to you. And He says, consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They neither have storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. A raven. Of how much more value are you than the birds? Comparing human life versus animal life, how much more of value are you than the birds? And can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your span of life? If worrying was going to get you somewhere, He said, maybe it would be worth doing, but you can't add anything to your life, not even time. If then, in verse 26, you are not able to do so small a thing as that, as adding time to your life, right? We're in control of everything, right? We are in control, we think, and we want to be. And He says, if you can't even do that, why do you worry about the rest? I guess, brethren, what I'm trying to say is that we can't be a bunch of worriers. We can't be concerned. We can't be anxious because we have the wrong priorities, the wrong focus. If we are concerned and anxious and fretting and angry or worrying all the time, we have the wrong focus. He's speaking directly to this topic. Why are you worrying? Why are you anxious? Why are you concerned? Why are you upset? He said, let's look at the lilies. Consider the lilies and how they grow. That song that we're all familiar with. They neither toil or spin, yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not clothed like one of these. And the comparison is, if God does that for the flowers of the fields and the birds of the air, how much more will he take care of you? Because he already said our life is so much more important than the birds. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? Do not keep striving for what you are to eat and what you are to drink, and do not keep worrying, it says. For it is the nations of the world that strive after all these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, strive for his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Again, he says, here's the solution. Don't worry, strive for the kingdom. Strive for the kingdom. I'm going to talk about this in the future, but I would ask you to consider the churches in the book of Revelation. I personally believe that when it talks about the seven churches in the book of Revelation, because it is the Messiah who is telling John to write these words to the churches, that it's not just reading what happened 2,000 years ago to a group of people in Asia Minor, but it was for us because it's a book of prophecy. It's about the end. Who then is the Laodicean church? Who are the people that say, I have wealth? You know, I looked up that 9% of the world has a refrigerator, of the people on planet Earth. Only 9%. No, I got that wrong. 13% had. 17%? All right, I'm being corrected. 17% have a refrigerator. Only 9% had a car with four wheels. You think of 6.5 billion people. How many Americans have more than one car? I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but at times in our family, we've had four or five for all the kids and all of this. And yet, how much of the world doesn't even own a car? Or a refrigerator, or have electricity and indoor plumbing, the number of people that have to walk every day just to get water. And so when you say, I'm not rich, I'm not increased with goods, Sharon and I marveled at our garage sale, hauling stuff and stuff and stuff, and it's like, where did all this stuff come from that we've never used in years in boxes, and it's stuff everywhere that we, compared to so much of the world, they would say, you're rich like kings. You're rich like kings. We have two freezers. It blows your mind when you stop and see what God has blessed us with. That when he talks to a church that says, you're rich, you're increased with goods, you have need of nothing. You know what? I'm worried that he's talking to me, because he's talking to the church of God from the Messiah, and he says, this is a problem. You have everything. You think you have. You have need of nothing. The things that I think I need, I really don't need. Oh, I need a tractor. I need a gun. I don't need any of that stuff, really. Because he's more than abundantly blessed us. And I dare say that almost every one of you could go through your house and say, where did all this stuff come from? Stuff upon stuff upon stuff that we try and sell, because we don't need all that stuff cluttering up our houses. But I just ask you to consider, if it's not us, then who is he talking to? Because that church is deluded. They're deceived because he says, you have said to yourself, I'm rich, I'm increased with goods, I have need of nothing. And you know what he says? But here's what you really are. You are poor, miserable, pitiful, wretched, blind, naked. And he said, I'm going to vomit you out of my mouth. You're going to have to come to me. I'm knocking at the door. I want to hear you because our stuff gets in the way. So I ask you, how much of your worrying is about stuff? How much of your worrying is about income? I've really had to do this thought process because I'm starting to get old enough where retirement, at least in the American way of thinking, is something they tell me I need to be prepared for, and I need to be planned for. It's not that many years away. And how are you going to live according to the lifestyle that you're accustomed? And how are you going to... And all of a sudden that makes you start thinking about how much money can I have and how much stuff can I have and how many assets can I have and how, oh no, what if I don't have enough and what's God going to do? And he's saying, don't worry about the stuff. Because if we go back to Matthew chapter 6, he deals with this a lot. We just read there in Luke, we can't even add an hour to our lifespan. And we're worried about stuff. How we're going to eat, how we're going to be clothed. So here's the parallel. In verse 25, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life. What you will eat or what you will drink or about your body, what you will wear, is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? And we again see about the birds, very parallel. In verse 32, for it is the Gentiles, those who are not converted, who strive for all these things, and indeed your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. He is aware of what we need. But here's what he says, but strive first for the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will bring worries of its own. Today's trouble is enough for today. And so I ask, brethren, as we look at what's going on in the economy, as we hear what's going on in the rest of the world, as there's all these discussions going out there, are we seeing what's happening? Are we paying attention to what's happening? Are we looking and saying, things look grim, but I'm sure glad that I've got God because I know He will take care of me. I know He knows what I need. I know that He knows what is important, and as long as I look to Him, as long as I look to the Father, as long as I read this book, I don't have to worry whether I'm going to eat, whether I'm going to have clothes on my back, whether I'm going to have a place to stay. It is amazing how God will act if you put Him first. And that's what He's saying. Don't worry if you put Me first, because if you do worry and you put seeking riches and treasures and stuff, then you're going to be like the Gentiles. And guess what? That's not a very good spot to be in. And I would like to conclude by reading a bunch of verses from the book of Isaiah. Because prophecy can be pretty scary if we don't understand what's going on. We can read, we've heard, I've been obeying, trying to follow God in this way of life for 47 years. I've heard lots of messages about the end is coming, the end of the world, and you know what? I'm 47 years closer to it. I pray, thankfully, every day that we're one day closer to the return of the King. One day closer. We're going to get there. It's coming. And yet, when you read the book of Revelation, when you read the book of Daniel, when you read some of the prophecies in Ezekiel and Jeremiah, it can get pretty scary. And then we start to worry and we start to get anxious. What is it going to be like? Will there be food? How will I survive? Are we going to be persecuted? Will there be martyrdom? And pretty soon you get uptight and you can't sleep because you're starting to worry about what's it going to mean? What's it going to mean? So let's go to Isaiah chapter 48. Book of Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 48, verse 16. We're going to read a whole bunch of verses like this to conclude because I think it should give us hope. Why we don't need to worry. Why we don't need to fret. Why we don't need to be concerned. Why we don't need to be anxious. Why we don't need to get upset with God because our life is difficult. Or we're struggling or we have trials. In Isaiah 48, verse 16, we read, "Draw near to me, hear this," he says. "From the beginning I have not spoken in secret. From the time it came to be, I have been there. And now the Lord God has sent me in His Spirit." From the beginning, God has been there. Let's look at verse 5 of the same. God speaking through Isaiah, "I declared them to you from long ago, before they came to pass, I announced them to you. So you would not say, 'My idol did them, my carved image and my cast image commanded them.'" Events. He said, "I told you from the beginning." Verse 3, "The former things I declared long ago. They went out from my mouth and I made them known. Then suddenly I did them and they came to pass." See, God has a plan. God has a purpose. God knows what He's doing and He knows where our role is, that our days, our steps are ordered. He has a plan. He's chosen us by hand. His Son died for us individually. We are to follow Him. We are to put Him first. And He says, "I got you covered. You just have to trust me. You just have to trust me. I have you covered, but you have to be humble. And you have to seek me first. Seek me first. Seek my kingdom first and the righteousness that goes with it." And you know what? The only righteousness that we can truly have that is of God is through Jesus Christ. It is only His righteousness imputed to us, because on our own, none of us can be righteous enough. I'll challenge you if you disagree. It is the righteousness of Jesus Christ imputed to us because we are Christ followers. He bought us. He paid for us. He sanctified us. He has justified us. He has imputed His righteousness to us. It is His blood that cleanses us and allows us to seek and go to the Father. It is the righteousness of Jesus Christ, because what we are being transformed into is the image of His Son. Let's look at, well, I skipped a chapter here. Go to 48, chapter 46, verses 8 and 10. Chapter 46, speaking to us, telling us, he says, "Remember this and consider, recall it to mind, you transgressors. Remember the former things of old. For I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is no one like me, declaring from the end, from the beginning, and from ancient times things not yet done, saying, my purpose shall stand and I will fulfill my intention. Calling a bird of prey from the east, the man for my purpose from a far country, I have spoken and I will bring it to pass. I have planned and I will do it." God has His plan laid out. He said He did it from the beginning. And from ancient times, things are not yet done. He knew when He created the earth and mankind that He had a way to save us. When He inspired this book to be written, He already had laid out what the end was going to be. And He tells us that. "I am God, there is no other. I am God, there is no one like me, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times things not yet done. Let's go to chapter 41. 41. Let's look at verse 4. He says, "Who has performed and done this, calling the generations from the beginning? I, the Eternal, am first and will be with the last." In verse 26 we read, "Who declared it from the beginning so that we might know, and beforehand so that we might say he is right? There was no one who declared it, none who proclaimed, none who heard your words. I first have declared it to Zion, to Israel, and I give to Jerusalem a herald of good tidings." God is very concerned for our well-being. He is very concerned for our future. He is very concerned for our holiness. He is very concerned for our love. He is very concerned for our well-being. He has a plan mapped out. I want to conclude by reading Isaiah chapter 40, verses 21 through 26. "Have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is He who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them like a tent to live in, who bring princes to naught and makes the ruler of the earth as nothing." Think about that. He's saying, look who I am, where I reside, what I do. The earth is like grasshoppers. I exalt princes. I exalt kings. I bring them down. I make them as nothing. I am the Most High. Scarcely are they planted, scarcely sown, scarcely is their stem taken root in the earth, when He blows upon them and they wither and the tempest carries them off like stubble. To whom then will you compare me? Or who is my equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see who created these. He who brings out their host by host and numbers them, calling them all by name, because He is great in strength, mighty in power, not one is missing. These should be very inspiring verses. They should be very motivational verses, that we have a God in heaven who says, "I have declared from the beginning what the end will be. You cannot doubt me because I am God. I raise kingdoms up, I take them down. I appoint rulers, I take them to nothingness. I know what I'm doing." And He said, "Just seek me. Just trust me. Just follow me, and I will take care of you." Yes, there will be trials. Yes, there will be difficulties. Yes, there will be persecution. Yes, there will be martyrdom. But He said, "I know all that. I know all that. I have it figured out. And I know the hairs on your head. I know what it takes to feed you. I know what it takes to clothe you. I know what it means to have a house to live in. I know your financial circumstances. I know, but all you got to do," He says, "is don't worry. Don't be anxious. But turn to me with prayers and supplications with thanksgiving. Humbly submitting yourselves to one another. Humbly submitting yourselves to me. Humbly acting like my children. And even when you're in a boat and you think you're going to drown," He says, "why are you afraid, O you of little faith?" Because if we really believed what He says, death doesn't mean anything to us. Right? There was a preacher some years ago that said, "If we don't raise this much money for my new whatever, then the Lord said He's going to take me home." And he did everything he could to raise as much money because he didn't want to die. And I thought, you know, if the Lord spoke to me and said, "It's your time, I'm going to bring you home. Now, I don't believe you go to heaven. I believe you wait until he returns to be raised up. But it's like, isn't that what we want? Isn't that the purpose of our heart that he said, you made it? Next thing you know, you're in eternity. And I thought, something's not right with this picture. That this guy's trying to hang on to his life for every cent that he could. And I think he made it. He raised millions and millions of dollars because people didn't want him to be called home to the Lord. I thought, wow. My goal, I hope your goal, I hope our goal is that we will be in that kingdom. And that means that it has to be first and foremost in everything that we do. First and foremost in every aspect of our lives. First and foremost in our finances. First and foremost in our jobs. First and foremost in our education. First and foremost in our hearts and desires. Because that's what he wants, is our heart. So I would ask all of you, just like I'm evaluating my own life, is my focus on stuff? Is my focus on retirement? Is my focus on what kind of food or how many refrigerators I have or how much stuff is in the refrigerator or can I retire in the style to which I am accustomed? And he says, why are you thinking that way? Where is your focus? Where is your priority? He said, if you seek my kingdom first and its righteousness, I'll give you all that. I got you covered. But if you're going to be out there striving for it on your own, that tells me that I'm not number one. That tells me you're not putting me first. And what's the first commandment? You shall have no other gods before me. No mammon, no job, no house. No bank account? What is taking you away from God? And I'm asking myself that because this is what this world is all about. It's all about stuff. It's all about fame and fortune and money and stuff. The advertising says you don't have it if you don't have this stuff. You won't be happy. You won't get the right girl. You won't enjoy your life. You won't if you don't have this stuff. So as we look at what's going on in this world around us, brethren, as we look at the chaos, the confusion, the anxiety, the lies, where's our heart? Where's our focus? Where's our faith? Again, to finish, have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is He who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers. It is He who stretches out the heavens like a curtain, and it is He who spreads them like a tent to live in. It is He who brings princes to naught. It is He who makes the rulers of the earth as nothing. In verse 25, to whom then will you compare me? Or who is my equal, says the Holy One. Lift up your eyes on high and see. Who created all of this? It is He who brings out their host by numbers them and numbers them, calling them all by name. Because He is great in strength, He is mighty in power, and no, not one is missing from His plan, from His purpose, from His desire. Let's look to the Mighty One. Look to His Son. And we don't have to be worried. We don't have to be anxious. We don't have to be concerned. He knows what's going on in our life. And He just says, trust me. Just trust me. And when we do, He says, I got you covered. I got you covered. And that is very, very, very reassuring that He knows what's going on in our lives. Aaron?
Weeks ago, I was walking through our local fair, and I like going in and seeing the exhibit barn, and just got sucked in by one little plaque. It was a wood-burning project, and had on it Isaiah 41:10. It says, fear not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, I will help thee, and I will uphold you with the right hand of my righteousness. When you started out today with the disciples in the boat, I thought of this immediately. I am with thee. And you know, the sad thing is, just like they did, we do it all the time. We turn our back. He's right there, feet away. We turn our back, just like the disciples, and we put our faith in the wood, the oars, and the sails. They were manning those sails for all they could, when all they had to do was just turn around and say, Father, you can calm the sea.
Yeah, great verses. I should have read those, so thank you.
We must be on the same wavelength, because during this week, I was thinking about righteousness also. And what is it? You know, how can we grasp it? Well, Jesus Christ was, he had self-control. He trusted his Father implicitly. And he had unconditional love. He had it for that thief on the cross. Or he was on the cross, whatever. So this week I kind of put a little thing together, S-T-U, stewing. You know, you stew about this and you stew about that. Well, if we want to have righteousness, and I'm at the bottom, I'm not up there yet. I don't, you know, I'm still learning too. And but if you have self-control first, when you're in some kind of a muddle with people or with stuff, whatever, just make yourself have self-control and give it all to Him, trust Him, and then have unconditional love. If it's with a person, you're not going to do that to a thing, but, you know, if it's with relationships. And just remember, righteousness, don't stew in it. Get yourself out of it, and hopefully you'll be on the way to righteousness. I've just started. I've got a long way to go.
Anyone else? Let's sing.